Let's bring in the big man as he joins us each and every Monday morning at 8 o'clock. Kevin Bieksa, a presentation of our good friends over at Andrew Sherritt Limited, your heating and plumbing wholesaler, proud BC-owned company since 1890. Juice, where do we find you today? It was Kentucky 2 weeks ago. It was Texas. How did you even get out of Texas, or are you still stuck in Texas for that matter?
No, thank God I'm not. I'm back in California, and after I talked to you guys, I just had a hell of a day. We end up going to the airport, renting a car. My whole family's there, like I said, my good friend and his son. So six of us driving this car, and we just start heading west with no plan. So we drive 30 mile an hour. 30 miles an hour isn't very fast for 5 hours. Get stuck in a ditch, and then I got to get pulled out by some cowboy. And I say, hey, listen, like, I'm embarrassed. I'm Canadian. Like, I shouldn't be getting stuck in the snow. He goes, oh, I could tell, bud, you're Canadian. Don't worry about the accent. I'm like, really? He goes, yeah, I work with a bunch of oil riggers that are Canadian. Don't worry, I won't tell them that I pulled some Canadian out of the ditch. So we ended up making our way west, and we had nothing open, no grocery stores, no fast food places, and we ended up eating our first meal about 5 p.m., which was a gas station. We went in and got all the Doritos and chocolate bars we could find, and that's what we ate for dinner that day.
Where did it end? Like, where was the destination? Did you drive all the way back to California, or how did it end?
Well, we got to El Paso, which is right on the Texas-New Mexico border. So we stayed in El Paso for the night. That took us all day just to get there because we were driving so slow. And we stayed the night there, and then we woke up the next morning, and everything was fine from out west after that. So it took us 2 days, but and keep in mind, I just drove back right from Toronto.
Yeah.
So a lot of time in the car, but it could have been worse. Like, we had people that ended up staying and trying to rebook their flight, and they were stuck there for 3-4 days.
You know, I appreciate and I respect the fact that you owned up to the fact that as a Canadian you got stuck in a ditch in Texas.
You know what happened?
Accountability.
I was driving. You get a little confident, right? So I'm like, I lived in Winnipeg for 2 years. I could drive in the snow. So I'm driving behind these cars to the airport. They're going slow. So I'm like, oh, there's some tracks in the faster lane. I'm going to go in the faster lane. So I go in the faster lane, the tracks. Everything's going great. And all of a sudden, the tracks just disappear. So I'm like, oh, crap, they're disappearing. So I try to get back into the center lane. And the tracks just turn into the grass. And then spin, 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 sucked in. I'm like, oh, this is embarrassing.
And you were driving.
I was driving, and then the cop that pulled over after, he was from Buffalo, and he's like, what are you doing, bud? And when I told him I'm from Niagara, and he's like, I'm from Buffalo, and he's like, I'm embarrassed for you.
Now, you are a laid-back guy. Is everybody traveling in the van as laid-back, or are you getting chirped?
No, I'm getting it. I'm getting it from my wife, my buddy in the back, who's a California guy, and no, they're not chirping me, but they're definitely not trying to console me, right? They're laughing at me. Like, we weren't in any danger. It was just we just started our journey, and we knew how long of a trip it was going to be. It was a tough way to start because we're like, how long are we going to be stuck here? And then some awesome cowboy stops by and pulls us out. He was our hero.
This feels like this is the makings for another sequel for Ice Cube's Are We There Yet movie, starring special guest Kevin Bieksa. Mm-hmm. It's like a new buddy deal. Hey, tell me this. We've talked a lot about what ails the Canucks and the potholes or the stuck in the snow, if you will, for the Canucks this season. But are we maybe just coming to the realization that this team just isn't good enough?
Well, it seems that way at times, right? Like, the moral victories are just not good enough anymore, and I'm just looking at the standings. Like, they're just slipping and slipping. There's so many games in hand on everybody, and they're, you know, with the games in hand that Winnipeg and Montreal have, if they win those, like, the Canucks aren't even close to getting back in. So, I mean, it's a tough season for them, and like I said before, I think on your show, is expectations were pretty high with the way last year went, but salary cap era strikes again, and you know, he couldn't afford Toffoli, and look what he's doing right now. Couldn't afford Markstrom, look what he's doing. Tanev is Tanev; he's always going to be great. So it's a bit of a, like, it's a mini rebuild, because you hope to add guys to replace them and keep going on the same trajectory, but it's been a step backwards. And now it's, the more you lose, the more it becomes contagious or easier to lose, if that makes sense. Like when you're winning, everything feels great, and you feel like you go in every game thinking you're gonna win, and then when you're losing, you're thinking, how are we gonna win this game? So I know it's hard for them, and it's tough to watch because they still have some pretty special players, right?
Do you come to a point, Kev, and it's different with only Zoom media sessions, but, you know, we heard from Pettis and we heard from Sutter. Do you come to a point where you kind of click in and as a player you give the standard answer, but what you're saying, oh, we're close, you know, we've just had some bad bounces. You come to the point where you're saying it, but you're not necessarily believing it?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe a little bit. I'm sure there's frustration in that dressing room. Like, they had chances to win that game yesterday, up 2-0. You know, when you're feeling it, you two-goal leads, you shouldn't be squandering those. So, I mean, and then they get back and they score a goal to tie the game late. And that's just one of those games where you need to kind of squeeze out that overtime win somehow. And I just think, well, the overtime goal, like it's best they're playing defense, right? And you just can't have forwards exposed on 3-on-3 all by themselves. Like even if you're like Quinn Hughes, kind of looked like he eased up, and he's like, I'm gonna take the second guy. Mm-hmm. Josh got Dubois, and you just, I think I showed it before last year in a clip. Whenever you're the only defenseman out in 3-on-3, you have to assume that it is a mismatch. Whenever it's against another forward, it's a mismatch because forwards don't put in the reps. They can't transition like defensemen do from backwards to forwards. I don't care what you say. So it's very easy to beat a forward wide, and it's just unfortunate that happened. And on the flip side, it was a great game for Dubois, something that he probably needed, right?
Well, tell me this: like, how do you like his impact in that lineup? Like, I mean, here's a guy who's still got to get acclimated to this team, right? He's only got what? That was only his third game because he wound up missing so much time. But I mean, how good a fit is that for this Jets team going forward here?
Well, he's another guy who's had a lot of question marks and a lot of people questioning his character and everything with the way the trade went and that shift. And then he goes through a couple injuries, which he claims he's never really been injured too much in his career. He played 240 games straight, and he was kind of chomping at the bit to get to play this game last night. And then he comes out and he has a game like that. Like, that's huge for Jets fans, because I guarantee you in the back of some of their heads after the first game or two that he played and the trade and the way everything happened, I guarantee you in the back of Jets fans' minds, they're like, oh, God, did we just get hosed on a trade? And then he comes out and he plays a game like this, and they're like, okay, this is who we got for Line A. Like, this might make sense. This might be good for us. So that was a huge game for him to kind of endear himself to the Jets fans, I think.
As we try and find a positive in what we witnessed here in Vancouver last night over 60 minutes, does Zach MacEwen deserve to be in this lineup on a regular basis? Coming in, answering the bell for the teammate, and he still shows energy when he plays. Do you need that guy in the lineup constantly?
Yes, 100%, especially when they're playing the way they are now. And I think you always need a guy. I'm maybe a little bit of an old school thinker that way, or a traditionalist, but I still think you need a guy like that he can play the game. He's got good hands. He's big. He can skate. He can be physical. So forget about the fighting. Like, you need a guy with just size that can skate and be physical. And then on top of that, he's a good fighter, and he'll fight anybody. So I don't understand why you wouldn't have that guy in the lineup every single night on the fourth line right wing, or at the very least. Or you can move him up depending on how he's playing or what you need. But it's just amazing hockey players that they go out, and MacEwen had nothing to do with the Höglander scrum the other night. And he comes in the lineup and he's like, I'm getting retribution for my buddy, even though I wasn't even on the ice or anywhere around it. It just shows you how cool it is to be a hockey player in the bond. And then you see Höglander on the bench, like laughing and smiling the whole fight. Like, it kind of gives you like a little bit of the shivers thinking about how cool that is. Like, just like sticking up for each other and having each other's back. And he gave him the one jackhammer on the top of the head when Forbat went down. I was hoping he would give him another one for me, because I always wanted that Forbat guy and he would never fight me. I wanted him to give him one more jackhammer on the top of the head for me.
Oh my God, listen to you. Like, what, you played one too many Mortal Kombat games, right? Finish him!
Exactly what it was. I remember one time I chased Forbat around the ice and I said, we're going tonight, big boy. And he goes, why? I go, well, you're the biggest guy on the ice. Like, what do you mean, why? And he's like, we're not, and we had like a conversation before the puck was dropped in LA. I'm like, so what's the answer? Like, I'm confused right now. And he made me think we were going to fight. And then he backed away and he went back to his point. And I'm like, what's the answer? And he's like, no. And so then Clifford came on. I ended up fighting Clifford, but it was confusing. Like, I always wanted a piece of that guy.
Well, humor me on this. I feel like I'll probably take a lot of grief for this here, but you know, I guess you love the fact that Hoaglander's willing to just go all over the ice like a little buzzsaw out there. But when you're that size and you go and hit somebody who's 6'4", 220 pounds, is there not maybe don't poke the bear, right? Like, you know, everybody was up in arms like, oh, well, why would you do that if you're Derek Forbort? But there's a little bit of like, let a sleeping dog lie sort of mindset around the hockey community, like a fair or foul.
No, Forbort's not a bear, first of all. He's not like a big, scary bear. You're not like
no, he's not a fighter.
Lucic.
Yeah.
No, he doesn't even play that hard for a big guy. But I think you need to have a team where guys like Hoaglander can go run whoever he wants. And
exactly.
There's no consequence. Like, you look at the Anaheim Ducks that won the Cup in 2007. Getzlaf and Perry did whatever they wanted that year. Andy McDonald and Timu did whatever they wanted that year because they had all the tough guys behind them. And that's a little bit of like the philosophy of having a bottom heavy tough team is that your guys, Pettersson can whack a guy if he wants to, you know, like JT Miller can rough up some guy and not worry about having to deal with Ryan Reeves or somebody that's a lot tougher than him. And that's why you need a guy like McEwen in there, because you want your guys, especially your little guys, you want them to play big and you want them to have courage. You want them to have, you know, no fear in going after guys like Forbot. So I still don't even know how to say the guy's name, but it just bugs me saying his name.
Forbot. I like it. Forbot.
Whatever. Forbot. Robot. Whatever the hell his name is.
Kevin Bieksa joins us as he does every Monday. Juice, let's go around the league. Obviously, we're working Saturday night. We lament what's going on here in Vancouver. At least they've played decent hockey in the last 2 weeks. What about Calgary, man? Are you surprised? You talk about, you know, getting guys' faces and maybe playing a little meaner than they have. Are you shocked at what the Flames are doing right now? Because they seem lost.
Yeah, a little bit of an identity crisis and just a lot going on in that room, right? With the team, players only meeting and the Bennett stuff. And they seem like they played really hard, though, on Saturday night. And unfortunately, Connor McDavid just took over. And he... It's funny, he had such a quiet first period. I barely even noticed the guy. And then you look at the score sheet after, and he's got 3 points. He's got a goal and 2 assists. And you're like, okay, well, you know, the puck kind of followed him a little bit. And then the second period, he just totally takes over, and he's the best player on the ice. So this Canadian division's tough, guys. Like, you look at Calgary, they got Toronto now. They're in Toronto playing them tonight and then Wednesday. And Matthews and Marner, I don't know if you watched that game against Montreal, they're playing probably the best that they've ever played in their career right now. So that's another scary duo that they have to deal with. So you got McDavid, you got them. It's just a tough, tough division right now. And there seems like there's no breaks until you get a chance to play Ottawa for a couple games. And even Ottawa's starting to play better now. So yeah, Calgary's not, their schedule's not getting any easier in the short term. They got back-to-backs with Toronto, and then they play Ottawa, I think, for three. But they have games in hand. That's the thing. If they can get their stuff together, they do have games in hand, and they can creep their way back into this playoff race.
I guess it sounds like they're just trying to figure out where to build the statue in Toronto for Auston Matthews right now. do you agree with all the love that Matthews is getting right now with what he's done this season?
Yeah, I do. I do agree with it. And I watched him really closely in playoffs. And I was just so impressed with how determined he was. And even when he wasn't super productive in playoffs at times, he was just, I didn't really watch him and Marner too much. Like, I played against them, but you don't really ever watch guys you play against. And then my first couple of years, I wasn't playing. I didn't really watch any hockey at all. And then I've really watched him the last year and a half, both of those guys. And Marner's everything people say. He's super high hockey IQ, sets up everyone around him, controls the game when he's on. And Matthews, though, for how big and strong, and his shot's probably the best in the league, he's a pretty hungry, determined guy. Like, he buzzes around and he wants to make a difference every shift. He's not, and I mean this in the most respectful way. He's not Ovechkin in the sense that he kind of just floats around at times and just, you know, waits for his chance to let his shot go. He's buzzing around and he's trying to make stuff happen. He's got a little bit of that Connor McDavid, Nathan McKinnon, screw you, I want to be the best in the world. He's got a little bit of that attitude, and because of that, he's getting better and better and better, because you could tell he wants to be the best, and he's feeling it right now. Like, his shot is feeling it, and his whole game is feeling it, but he deserves all the accolades he's getting right now.
But do we, you know, I always go back to Travis Green saying he probably played 6 years in the league before he understood so many things. Do we sometimes not give Austin Matthews that benefit, that the more you play, the more you lose, the more you learn?
Yeah, of course you do. You should be getting better every season. And I know for a lot of players it's the opposite. But you should be getting better every season. If you're a person who has the right attitude that you actually want to learn, I can't remember who said, there's a quote the other day, I can't remember who it was. It was from a really good player in the Canadian division. And he said, listen, if you want to learn and you want to be open to criticism and open to coaching, like, you can get a lot better. Because there's a lot of people dissecting a lot of different areas of the game. If you're open to it, you take it. I think it was Shabbat. It was Shabbat in Ottawa. He had a terrible start to the season and it started to kind of find his game before getting injured. But if you're open to criticism and open to coaching, you should be getting better every game and every year, because there's a lot of people around these players that are trying to help them. It's just some people put up that brick wall, and you know what? Maybe even I was guilty of it at times. I felt like later in my career, I don't know, it was a combination of maybe me thinking, well, this coach doesn't really know anything more than I already know, or it was a combination of them being maybe a little bit intimidated, like, oh, he already thinks he knows that I can't come to him. But being coachable, and it seems like Austin Matthews is coachable, because he's constantly looking at different ways for his shot, his release. He's on the ice early with skilled coaches and shooting coaches, and that's the way of the future. Be coachable.
Kevin Bieksa here on Sportsnet 650, a presentation of Andrew Sherritt Limited. Story about Artemi Panarin coming down this morning. He's taken a leave of absence. Have you seen this at all?
I have. I don't want anything to do with this story, guys. Nothing.
Yeah, yeah, no. I mean,
what do you say about it? Like, it's crazy, and it's not our culture for most of us. And I don't know. What do you say? You hope it's not true, but there's not a whole lot I want with that story.
So no, tell me this, true. Then. Sidney Crosby plays his 1,000th game. Do you have a Sid story at all from your time being on the ice with him?
Yeah, I have a story. Our first year, we almost got into a fight.
Really?
Sid and I. We're in Pittsburgh, and yeah, he had all the recognition. He was the first overall pick, and it was early in his career. And you guys remember, early in his career, I don't know if you remember, but he was really feisty, and he was, you know, like he had like that chip on his shoulder, and he was kind of angry, and Pittsburgh wasn't a great team out of the gates, and I'm sure he was a little bit frustrated with not winning, and he used to get into like scrums after whistle. So we're in front of our net, and he's digging at the goalie. I can't even remember who it was, probably like Alex Auld, and I kind of grabbed him I grabbed him around the neck a little bit just for him to stop digging. And, you know, thinking I'm not going to rough this guy up too much. Like, he's 18. I was probably like 24 and just dusting middle age back then. But he gets up and he pushes me in the chest. And I'm like, stop it. It's like when your kid gets old enough to fight back. You're like, stop it. And then he pushes me again. I kind of grab him and bulldog him a little and throw his head off. And he just keeps pushing me and like coming at me. And I'm like, stop doing this. Like, I don't want to have to fight you. So it was funny how, because my dad was at the game. He drove to Pittsburgh, and he was like, are you going to fight that kid? And I go, no, like, I don't think so. But it was almost like the Fedorov situation. You're like, no, 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 no. And then you're like, yes, 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 yes. So I'm lucky it didn't get to that point. But Sid, on a softer note, 2 years ago at the All-Star game, I think it was 3 years ago at the All-Star game in San Jose, I was working at a sports set. I was on the bench for all their games. And then after the last game, the finals was over. The Metropolitan ended up winning it. As soon as the game was over, dropped my headset, I'm gone. I'm getting out of there. I'm going to get my clothes, find my son, and get out of there. Didn't even know, like, what happened with the MVP. And I'm walking past the visitor's dressing room in San Jose where the team's already in there celebrating. And Sid's walking by himself because I guess he stayed on the ice to win the MVP. And he walks by me, and I'm just like, hey, Sid, what's up? And just figured he'd say like a hello and keep going and go into the dressing room and celebrate with his team. But he stops and he honestly has a 5-minute conversation with me about, oh, how was Spengler Cup? Did you like it? How was it? Like, what was the city like? And how you
he
like
loves hockey, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Like, he just loves the sport, doesn't he?
But he's just such a genuine guy. I'm thinking, like, didn't you just win the MVP? Like, go celebrate. And he was more concerned about, like, genuinely what was going on with me. And I was just kind of laughing. I'm like, yeah, man, like, it was good. It was fun. There's a lot of snow there. Like, we lost in the finals. It was cool.
Yeah, the guy never makes a mistake, it seems. Hey, is your wife for the win with the Vern Fiddler in the mantle, or did you think of that one?
No, that's all my wife again. She's pretty witty.
Nice play. Oh, very good play.
And Michael Jordan, too, right? Were you a Jordan guy as a kid?
Jordan's been there.
Yeah, I'm a huge Jordan guy. We're a Jordan family. All of us, we all have our Jordans, and that's all we wear. Michael Jordan's son, Marcus, who runs a company that collaborates with Jordans, he said this once to a friend, and I always remembered it. Whenever he meets somebody, he looks down at their shoes right away. And ever since he said that to me, now I'm always, like, very, very cautious of what shoes I'm wearing. Because shoes tell a lot about a man. So think about that, guys, when you're leaving the office or the studio after, and you're just staring at people's shoes all day.
There's an incredible story. Jordan just turned 58 last week. But I was talking to Vic, the longtime doorman of the Roxy, recently, and he shared a story about the night that Michael Jordan was at the Roxy, and the place went ballistic. I'll save it for another day, but it's a pretty epic tale when Michael Jordan invaded Vancouver.
Where were you? Were you hanging out in the bathroom? What were you doing in there?
It would have been 96, so I wasn't quite here yet. But yeah, I was probably loitering with a roll of toilet paper saying, hey, can I help you out there, Mike? Yeah, sure.
Oh, God.
Thanks, Bruce. Appreciate it, man.
Okay, guys. Talk soon.